All right, Mackenzie.
What up, Lamar?
Big one this week. It's
Biggin.
Deadpool and Wolverine, probably the biggest blockbuster of the summer of 2024. I mean, yet to be
For
determined,
sure.
but it's already August now, so I'm assuming this is going to be the
It's
big
gotta
one.
be. It's still going strong too. Yeah, I had to
Exactly.
dress
Like,
for the occasion. I'm in the red, so nobody
fair.
sees me bleed.
I wish I had known. And I was going to say that this is also, I think, biggest R-rated opening of all time and on
Yeah.
track to be one of the top grossing R-rated films of all time. So good for you with your F words, Wade. But I wanted to, this is sort of a send-off in some ways. We're not going to get into spoiler territory, but not only is it the potential for Deadpool to enter the MCU with all these acquisitions and Disney kind of owning everything, there's potential there, but it's sort of a send-off in some ways to the original Fox Marvel films with the X-Men and different films like that. So who was, we'll stick with in
It's
that
like
little,
peace out, Fox, is what this whole thing
yeah.
is.
So let's focus on that little microcosm of this universe. And who was your favorite X-Men, or who is your favorite X-Men?
Rogue,
And why
hands
Rogue?
down. Yeah, no, I've been obsessed with Rogue from a very young age. I mean, I love the X-Men, period. I was the like kid who watched the animated X-Men like incessantly, like all of them.
Same, yes.
And I read the comics, of course, but I always loved Rogue, and I was a little salty that I like had such dark hair because I always wanted to dress up as her, but she has that like
The
red
red with
hair
the
with the
white
streak, and I
streak,
was like, I
yeah.
can't pull this off. So wasn't thinking wigs. Anyway, I just always wanted to be Rogue. I thought she was such a badass. She can fly. She can literally steal anybody's powers. I love Rogue. I think she's such a fun character. I think even in X-Men, the live action version, they did a good job with her. I think they should have featured her more, which I think is a common opinion. A lot
It
of
was
people
an it,
wanted more
yeah. It
Rogue,
was an
but yeah.
interesting take to have her be downplayed and to be sort of this rookie young. They kind of gave her the Jubilee role, right? Of this
Yeah.
youngster that's just discovering. Like, we're not talking about
And
that
it's
movie,
okay
obviously,
to
but.
tell that story. Like, it was an
Yeah.
origin kind of reboot, and I get that, but they like never really give her flowers. Like, she
Right.
becomes a bad bitch, and they focus solely on Jean Grey, and they make her the bad bitch, which don't get me wrong, Phoenix, I get it, blah, 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 blah. But like, Rogue is also awesome. Who's your favorite X-Men?
Well, fitting that we have a pod together and you chose Rogue because my favorite was always Gambit. So biggest Gambit guy in the business today.
I
If
fucking
I,
love Gambit too. Like, I was always a big fan of
just
his.
so fun. He's like the best
He's
combo. He's like
fun.
a cooler Wolverine without all the fucking issues. It's like, what if
Yeah.
Wolverine was as
Without the
badass as he is?
trauma.
Yeah. And he didn't fucking mope all the time and he just had a
Yeah.
personality. He's charismatic. So
He
always
just
a big
leans
Gambit
in.
guy. Yes.
He also has a fun costume. Like, he just has a vibe, you know? He is a good energy. Yeah.
Also,
I
he's
think
a
that was a great
gambling
pick.
addict, so I relate to that.
Always gotta play them cards. Yeah.
I'm surprised there's not, billboards with the character's face on it leaving Vegas. That's like gambling problem. It's like, call this 1-800 number, mon ami,
Just needs to play in the airports as you leave. That's the new ad. Ugh. Welcome back to We Drink and We Watch Things. I'm Mackenzie.
I'm Lamar.
And we are continuing Blockbuster Summer Month, specifically with, again, the movie of the summer. I think we've already said this at least once, Deadpool and Wolverine. Who has not seen it? I mean, more people will see it, I'm sure, but man, it feels like everybody's seen it already.
Everyone's seen it once, if not twice. I actually meant to go see it a second time before we recorded, but we bumped this up. I assumed we were going to do it at the end of the, but because of our shooting schedule, recording schedule. It was like, well, if we do it, then it won't be hitting until the end of August. And I feel like people want the
Yeah.
conversation now. Twisters can wait. Twister's also a huge cinematic, I'm sure,
Yes.
incredible, life-altering film, but this one needs to be discussed now.
Yeah, this one we felt like this needed to happen stat, actually. I'm glad that we're covering it today. We really leaned into the theme. I dressed for the occasion. We cocktailed for the occasion. So to that end, what are we drinking today?
Yeah, so another invention from Craftworld, CRFTWRLD Skyler, who made us this drink. And he actually did two drinks for us.
Yep.
I guess the first one was a little simpler. Do you want to explain is it the Logan or the Wolverine cocktail?
Well, it's
Cocktail.
Deadpool and Wolverine are the two
Yeah.
cocktails, as so named for the film, obviously. And one is Wolverine, which it will shock no one to find out that is my drink, which is bourbon on a rock.
And, two ingredients, bourbon.
Two ingredients, ice. Very Wolverine of us. I also chose a specific bourbon, which is Brothers Bond Bourbon, sponsor us, because I genuinely, one, love this bourbon. I've talked about it before on the pod. I really do. But I think it's a great homage to them. Their new Bond coming out of this movie.
That's a good take. And this one is the Deadpool, which, as we know, is made for me because it's the sweet one. Mm-hmm. So the sweet sugary drink. And this has gin, Aperol, strawberry puree or grenadine, and Cointreau and lemon. And it basically, it's going down kind of like a Cosmo, like a little more bitter than a Cosmo because of the Aperol, but pretty good.
And I made it as a backup as well in case I run out of drinks, because why not? But I want to call it again this week. My glasses. They are so appropriate for this movie. I also used Skull Ice Rocks. Thank you so much. And I also put Wolverine with our basil. So he can
it's
be.
It's going
to
make
Deadpool.
A very pretty social post. I tell
it
you
is going to be so pretty. I'm so proud. I had to brag. Okay. Cheers.
Cheers.
Poor Lamar had to wait on me while I did the cocktail photo shoot today.
Also, not a coincidence that I'm drinking out of a fucking martini glass.
Could totes be on sex and. It feels Deadpool and Sex and the City at the same time. Like, just get with the girls. Are you a Samantha? That's the question. Who's your
like
Sex
Deadpool
and the City character?
Fit right in with the Sex and the City.
Oh, 100%.
Like Samantha, Wade. I don't
know.
That would be
for
you. Know.
That would be a scene that I would watch. Is Wade and the girls having a Cosmo? That would totally be a thing. 100%.
Why can't I can't think of any other sex? Wait, don't tell me, Samantha. Chloe, Deborah.
Chloe, Deborah. Oh my God. Imagine if one of them was named Deborah. That would not work. I just want y'all to know nobody would. No offense to the Deborahs out there, but it would not fit in. But no, it's. Wait, I'm going to see if I can get this because it's been a minute. Charlotte.
Yes, that's one.
Samantha.
Yes.
Carrie, of course. Oh gosh. Who's the last one? She's the lawyer. I do know that. She's the lawyer. Yikes. I'm
Garbanzo.
A bad.
Garbanzo.
It'll pop into my head at the worst possible time. Anyway, if you watch that show again, it doesn't really hold up. It's not great. So I shouldn't feel that bad. Anyway, moving on. Deadpool and Wolverine. Obviously a film this year, 2024, summer 2024, has some excellent ratings so far. I imagine, again, like we said with the Fall Guy, they'll probably update and change, but they're already really good. So the IMDb rating is 8.2 out of 10. Very solid. And the Rotten Tomatoes is 78% critics, 96% audience. That's pretty fire.
The critics thing is interesting to me.
I do find that interesting.
78 and like the 8.0 on IMDb feels about right, because this is, if you're not into this genre of film, you're probably not going to have a great time. But I do know a few, when I say know a few, when you look on Reddit and things like that, there are some people who say the story isn't super coherent, but I'm like, that's not why you go see a Deadpool film.
I was going to say, I don't think it's supposed to be, you know?
It's all tongue in cheek. So just sit back and relax.
Yeah. And we talked about this last week, AKA today. And I totally think that with certain films, especially summer blockbustery actiony kind of movies, I think you have to come into it with a modicum of suspension of disbelief and just accepting what this movie is going to be. This is going to be a silly, good time action movie. It's not supposed to be super cohesive all the way through. I don't think that's weird. I think that's what we came here to see. Let's move on.
Yeah.
So critics, get your shit together. This was a good time is the point. Moving on, folks. We're going to blow through some basics, and we're going to be really cautious with the basics. This time we're going to do some very, very basic basics so that we can keep it spoiler free. And then we'll announce our spoiler phase of the pod, and we'll talk about some of those other pieces. So we'll get into some, like we said, some of the director details and things like that. So this one is Sean Levy is the director of this one. And what do you know him from? Like, what's your favorite Sean Levy?
I didn't know his name from anything, but when I looked up his history, I did recognize sort of Free Guy, which I enjoyed. Wasn't perfect, but it was enjoyable. Another sort of just over the top action movie. every night at the museum. I don't know why they keep going back to the museum after the one bad night, but they've made like three or four of those. Real Steel. And this is the one that's sort of out of the blue, is this movie came out in 2003. So by this point, I was old enough, I think, to distinguish like an enjoyable movie from a not great movie. Cheaper by the Dozen with Steve Martin. I fucking loved that movie when I was 19 years old. It was the funniest fucking thing. And it's like two parents. It's basically Brady Bunch, but with 12 kids.
Yeah, yeah. Six.
And I watched it probably five or six times. So good on you, Sean Levy.
Way to go. I agree. I think like you recognize some of the stuff that he's done. I remember Cheaper by the Dozen, but I don't remember thinking it was hilarious. That being said, it probably was pretty funny. We also have some writing credits that I want to discuss here. If you don't remember this of the prior Deadpools, Ryan Reynolds was credited as a writer, but he was always like the third or fourth credit, generally speaking. He's the number one credited writer in this case. And I think it speaks to like how much of this movie is, this has really evolved to be his character, his stories. I think we know what a fan he has always been of Deadpool. And he really just like is Deadpool, let's be honest. So I like that he's the number one credit, first of all, this time.
He campaigned so hard to get the first film made. And it was just in development hell for so long. I remember it seemed like it was never going to happen. So it's so awesome to see him have so much control. It's one of the rare cases where you're like, I want this person to have creative control over this franchise. And I think
because
Ryan
they do
Reynolds
such a good job.
Just, yeah, he's 3 for 3 so far.
He's just so invested in it. Like we said, like this means so much to him, and it shows in the way that he produces this and writes this and all the things. He does, of course, have some writing help here, as he has had on the others. So we have Rhett Reese and Paul Wernick. And my hypothesis is that these are the same person. Because
he's
just
collecting two salaries.
They just collect two salaries. It's the same person. They look very similar. If you see a picture of them, they have written fucking everything that they have done together. I think that they're either secretly the same person or they're twins and they're just not telling us and they share the same mind. I don't understand. Anyway, they have written both Deadpools. They have done Zombieland together. They did Spiderhead together. They did Ghosted, which is a recent one that like came out on Netflix. They did that together. They've done a bunch of shit. Just they do everything together. I think they're attached to the hip.
Yeah, they did G.I. Joe Retaliation, which a lot of people actually thought was better than the first one because the first one was so fucking bad. I don't think the second one is great, but it is better than the first.
I have so many comments about this situation that you just like, I have my, if you guys could see me right now, the emotions that I just went through. One, that's the fucking movie that you called out that they have written. You're like, let me bring
up. Well, you took all the good ones.
There were some other ones.
You
took all
the Deadpools, Zombieland. You left me G.I. Joe Retaliation.
G.I. Joe Retaliation. Not just any G.I. Joe. G.I. Joe Retaliation. And then proceeded to not only let us know that you have seen G.I. Joe, but that you have seen G.I. Joe Retaliation, who it seems like nobody would have gone and seen.
You have to know
and that
the
you
response.
Have opinions about them.
It's the American military. There's always going to be a response. You have to know how we retaliate. But I'm going to segue and make this a classy segue because I wanted to point out that even though this has been the same writing team for all three films, there's been a different director every single time. And I thought that was interesting because you would think that the director changing would lead to some sort of shift in how the movie's perceived. But again, it's 3 for 3 here. And I think that just speaks to Ryan Reynolds and the other two dudes, I don't want to, so Rhett and Paul, and just their abilities as a writing team to make this all feel seamless from film to film.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, the source material is so important, obviously, because it definitely tells this story in the same way. Yeah, the vibes feel similar across the board. So we're going to hop into some quick cast, but we're going to stick, like we said, to the bare minimum here, which is obviously Ryan Reynolds, the guy, Deadpool. Speaking of guys, he was also in Free Guy. Oh, see what I did there? Do y'all see what I did there? Okay.
Wait,
he also
explain
did
it to me like I'm five. What did you do?
So Free Guy, he's in Free Guy, and then also was the guy because Deadpool, and this is the guy, and he's the lead guy. Did you get it? You got it?
Is it a reference to Fall Guy? We watched that movie. Is that what you're
going? Yeah, you totally got it. I'm so proud of you. You got there. You got there. He also did Red Notice, which I feel like I just have to roast him a little for Red Notice, which is actually why I included it in this list. It's so fucking cheesy. Have you seen it?
I've never seen Red Notice. No.
It's on Netflix. It's really bad. It's like kind of bad. And I just went on a rant about how you have to watch movies and accept them for what they are. And I felt like I was doing that when I watched that movie, and it was still kind of bad. Anyway, moving on.
I feel
on.
Like if Ryan Reynolds were not as a charming and charismatic, but also the sense of humor that he has, where he can be sort of self-deprecating, if he didn't have those two qualities about him, I think he would have failed in Hollywood a while ago. Because it seems like he does some really great stuff, but he also has some stinkers in there.
He super does.
Anybody else who's just an attractive actor without those qualities might have given up after a couple of those.
Honestly, but to that end, let's move on to Hugh Jackman, another person with whom I am obsessed, because he does have fucking range. This guy can play anything. He is obviously X-Men and does all the Wolverines in 27 iterations. If you Google how many X-Men Wolverine movies this fucker has done, it's wild. I love that they make a reference to it in this movie about how he's just going to do this till he's 90, because he is.
I was hoping that you were going to say, we have Hugh Jackman, and you may know him from X-Men, X-Men 2. X-Men, The Last Stand, Wolverine, or just list all of them.
Wolverine, X-Men, Days of Future Past, X-Men, First Class. Like, yeah, we could keep this going for fucking ever because he's in all of them. It's crazy. And he does such a great job. I am making fun facts Skylar watch them all because he has not seen them all, which is alarming to me. Moving on. The Greatest Showman, he's in that musical, right? Les Mis, musical. He's in a bunch of musical theater on Broadway as well. He was in The Music Man, which again they make reference to.
Prisoners. My daughter is missing and I've kidnapped this guy.
Yeah, totally, exactly. If you haven't seen Prisoners, that was a really accurate representation.
Our listeners love when we do back-to-back episodes, and we're
they really do. Start the next. We're three drinks in and we're doing great. All right. He's also in Van Helsing, which you know I wasn't going to let slide because
I could see you being a Van Helsing fan.
It's so terrible. It is bad. It's a bad, it's a objectively bad movie, but it's like a funny watch because it's so bad. So anyway, if you haven't seen it, you should see it. He does The Prestige. He does Swordfish, where he's supposed to play a nerd, which I'm sorry. No, like did not work, but still a good movie. And I have to finish this out with Kate and Leopold, because you can't not have a rom-com, okay? You got to do your rom-com time.
Okay.
Yeah, he's Meg Ryan's love interest in that, and he plays like an 18th century gentleman, and, you know, yeah, he's handsome and charming. He can play that bit very well.
So going back to Swordfish, you don't picture Hugh Jackman as a guy that went to coding camp?
I don't. He doesn't feel like a coding camp guy. He feels like a musical theater camp guy, though, because we definitely have seen the results of that.
You said something where you just, I mean, literally the thing you said was he does such a good job. It blows my mind when I hear him talk in real life and he has that thick accent, because the fact that he can pull off Wolverine, and some of his monologues in this film are just so fucking like gruff and angry. Yeah. And I love it because, and then you hear him talk in like, I think in the
in
credits,
his normal Australian accent, real life,
and you're like, oh, that's this guy.
Because you do hear a lot of actors who are doing an American accent and are not, whether it's British or Australian or whatever their original accent is, when they do an emotional monologue or something with a lot of anger or whatever it is, you hear them slip a little sometimes, or you hear like one word that triggers you. You're like, ugh, took me out of it for a second, whatever.
It's like
you
one
just
of two
don't
things.
Get that with him.
Either they go back, they slip back into their accent because they're going too emotional, or they pull back on the emotion because they're afraid of slipping into their accent. It's usually one of those two things.
Yeah, and he just doesn't have that problem. He just can fucking commit and he kills it. So also Emma Corrin is in this. She's kind of our villain of this particular one, which we'll get into. And she's done a number of things. Also, I think this is a really fun turn for her because it's a bit different. She played in The Crown, she was Princess Diana, for example. And she also did Lady Chatterley's Lover, another like very classic English type of film. And then she's done a lot of British TV. So just
I had never heard the name before this, but she kills it in this film.
She kills it. And if you saw her in The Crown, which again is like a pretty popular show, so I feel like some of you have probably seen her in that. It's so different because she does a very good job of playing Princess Diana in that. So it's a very different energy. Matthew McFadden, who has been, I think, made most famous recently by Succession on HBO.
Tom Wamsgams.
Tom Wamsgams. What a name on like so many levels. Anyway,
yeah,
that show is one great. Two, he's great in it. And he also does The Three Musketeers, the 2011 one. And I point that out for a reason, because let's not disrespect the 90s Disney one, which is in fact
like
the OG.
Four different Three Musketeers films?
There are several, and none is as good as the Kiefer Sutherland, Oliver Platt, the OG one. Thank you so much. And then also he did Pride and Prejudice. Again, you got to have your rom-com. They all have to do their rom-com time, is what I'm saying, on the whole. Those are the ones I think that I was planning to feature without getting into the weeds too much. Did you have any that you thought?
Only other one
cover?
I would call out for him is Death at a Funeral with Peter, the original with Peter Dinklage. He's in that one. Mm-hmm, and that's, it's just cool to see Matthew McFadden getting sort of his breakout roles in the last 5 years or so.
Yeah, I think he's great. I think he's good. I think he plays a good, I don't know, I wouldn't full blown call him a villain in this one, but villain leaning.
Yeah, I know folks who love that sort of the novel-based romantic comedies like Pride and Prejudice probably already knew Matthew McFadden, but I hadn't really heard of him until Succession, so now it's cool that he's
plays a really good Mr. Darcy, for the record. He does do a good job. Yeah, yeah. They play that, like, tension, proper romance thing really well. Yeah, we're a big fan of Matthew McFadden here on the pod, just so you know. Well, we have more that we will talk about later, but we're going to give you this summary cracks me up. I can't even get through it. I'm going to give you the quick plot summary, which is Deadpool is offered a place in the Marvel Cinematic Universe by the Time Variance Authority, but instead recruits a variant of Wolverine to save his universe from extinction. Is that accurate? Do we feel like that's accurate?
That's accurate. And that speaks to when I was saying some people said the plot doesn't make sense. That's literally, that's the plot. It doesn't need to make sense. It can just be, here's a reason to have Deadpool and Wolverine interact. Let's go.
Yep.
It's a blast.
It's a blast. And it also, like, that is amazing that it did that without giving much away. So not bad. So before we get into all the spoilery stuff, what is your spoiler-free rating?
Spoiler-free rating is that this was a fucking blast. I've only seen it once. I plan to see it again in theaters, and we'll probably
watch
it. I was
going to say, let's just go after this. Let's just go watch it again.
Yeah. I will probably watch it at least once more streaming or twice more streaming. And if they make a fourth Deadpool at some point, I'll probably watch
it. Oh, I'll be there.
To that.
With bells on.
I think that it's sometimes it's hard to rate sort of action comedies because I don't think there's a single one that I would ever give a 10. And there are a couple jokes that I'll call out later where I think either the punchline didn't land or maybe there's some running jokes that weren't incredible for me first time through, which means they probably will be more irritating on second and third watches. But if I give the original Deadpool like a 9, I'd probably give this one like an 8.5. It's up there. It's really damn good. There's a few drawbacks, but I just think from front to back, at least on initial watch, you're never bored, first of all.
Yeah.
It's nonstop. There's something. I like the way that it moves from set piece to set piece and from beat to beat. There's never a dull time. And yeah, with the exception of those couple downsides that we'll bring up later, I think it's just a really good time to be had. So I'll go 8.5.
Well, I think that's, I mean, I'll plus one all of that. I think it's super enjoyable. I think it's great for nerds of the MCU, but also of X-Men, of Deadpool, of whatever. But then it's also just good for film nerds or Ryan Reynolds fans or Hugh Jackman fans, because there's so much meta-ness to it all of like just referencing things that you just maybe like about these actors or these, you know, the production in general. And so I just think it's really fun, and it does a good job of, even though it has all these references that could in theory take you out of it, they don't. Really. I feel like they are interwoven in such a good way that you snap right back into the story. And to say nothing of all the fun references and cameos, which everybody knows are coming, but we're not going to spoil here. So I gave it a 9.5. I just had like a great time, and I was LOLing hard throughout. And I love all the nerd references, which I will say, if you're going to stay for this, Marvel nerds, my friends, we love you. We respect you. We're going to give you some nuggets, but we will by no means capture them all. We're not even going to try because you'll just be mad at the ones that we miss.
And
so
you
just
also,
accept
when you
that
say
now.
Marvel nerds, we're including ourselves in
ourselves.
That. You were more of a comic fan than I was, but I've loved Marvel, you know, from the TV shows and the movies and stuff. But if we included every single thing, we'd be here for like four hours.
We'd be here for 47 hours deep diving on every single reference. So just accept now that that's not going to happen. But
before we get into spoiler territory, the only other thing I wanted to say about my rating is I will say I enjoyed this more than Deadpool 2 on first watch.
Yeah.
The first two films. I think it's about even with where I felt in the first one, aside from the whole marking out for like Wolverine and Deadpool in a movie, seeing that for the first time was fucking awesome. But I enjoyed this more than Deadpool 2.
Yeah, I definitely enjoyed this more than Deadpool 2. And that reflects in this one, I think, that people probably universally kind of felt that way. So yeah. Anyway, like we said, that was our spoiler-free section. If you would like to hear spoilers, you're welcome to stay. If not, turn around, don't drown. It's spoiler time. So, good fun. A couple little production notes, I will say, not so spoilery, but I do want to say, which is that this is $658.9 million at the box office right now and going strong. That's after, what, two weekends?
Yeah.
One weekend? One yeah. and a half weeks, something? That's fucking wild. And like you said, for a rated R, like it's a biggest rated R opening of all time. I think the one before that, if correct me if I'm wrong, was Deadpool, though.
I think it was the original
Deadpool. The OG. Yeah. There's always a dip on that number two, man. The second in a trilogy or a series, like, is just never as strong as the first. There is so rarely one that is as good or better.
And this has, like I said in the spoiler-free section, of like the fact that you're getting Hugh Jackman and Ryan Reynolds playing these characters, I think is also a huge draw because you're pulling back in those folks who haven't seen the Wolverine character in, what, 5-6 years, whenever Logan came out, so...
Which, and nobody expected, I will say, like, of course, there's always this possibility, but I don't think people expected after Logan for there to be Wolverine resurgences, really, other than cameos that are supposed to predate his death, right? So, again, I think this does a good job of addressing that. They actually consulted the writers of Logan to make sure that it wouldn't impede on that storyline.
Yeah,
but
because
I will
that
just,
was meant to like lay to rest this character who we had been seeing on screen.
It was supposed to be
15,
his funeral, literally.
At that point, yeah.
Which, to be fair, if you look at like all the Fox versions of Wolverine and his private appearances, it did at the time like feel kind of like time to put it to bed. I think that's fair, you know?
Yes.
And I think they did a good job in a really emotional film that was like so different than anything Wolverine up to that point that it in and of itself was a real risk, but did a good job. I would say so.
And for me, it was like they had already hit perfection with Wolverine Origins.
Yeah.
So I didn't understand why they kept making movies after that because Wolverine Origins was fucking perfect. Will I Am? That's the only Marvel movie or Fox movie with a Black Eyed Pea in it. And
wow,
like a Wolverine Black Origins. Why did they keep making films after that?
I didn't like the Wolverine though. I liked almost
that's
all the
movies
that he was
Japan,
in.
Right?
Yep. It felt like such a hard fucking left turn. It felt like a reach. It felt like Japan is trendy. Let's go there. You know what I mean? I was like, I'm not into it. It wasn't, but on the whole, love Wolverine and love all those movies. Anyway, moving on. This was it's going gangbusters against its budget is the point. It was a $200 million budget and it's, more than tripled that at this point. So that's awesome. But I think high level, we go right into picking up where we left off and trying to explain ourselves right out of the gate of like, how are we here? Why are we here? And it's this fucking montage scene right away of this intense fight scene. Just at like, you don't get to breathe. This is just, we are in here immediately. And I like that. I like that he's just like, what did you expect? Welcome to Deadpool, bitch. Like,
which
we're getting right
is,
in here.
I forget the opening of the second one, but I know the first one did the same thing where they show you a big action sequence at the start.
Yeah.
And then you get kind of a flashback to here's how we got here. And then it leads back into that action sequence. So
yeah,
I think they definitely have a formula there with how can we make the beginning of this movie super interesting without it being a build in some way. It's like, let's throw you in, give you a little bit of blood and all this action stuff, cut you back to how we got here, and then we'll jump back to the action. It does a really good job of pacing.
I think so, yeah. And like, you get into this really, controversial scene because Deadpool, right? Like, it's just gotta be controversial, where he's literally dug up Logan's bones. That's what is happening. It's all adamantium skeleton. He's gone nuts already.
And that's funny to hear when you said that they consulted with the director and writers of Logan to
and
make
they just
sure it wasn't going to fuck with the ending, but he's literally desecrating the body.
He's like, let me just desecrate this grave and go to fucking town. And the Logan guys were like, you know what? Checks out.
That's
all
fine.
Right.
Yes. Totally fine. As long as you don't bring this Wolverine back to life.
Yeah, this one is for sure still dead. Check. Cool. Do whatever you want. That's essentially how that conversation went. But it's just such a fun scene because the fucking antics in this first fight scene out of the gate are out of control. Like, he does all of his typical, like, he's just so smooth. It's choreographed, of course, but it's while also being hilarious. And again, working in Wolverine from the start, it's dead Wolverine, right? But he's right here and he's using all of his body parts to
take apart these TVA agents.
Yeah, just destroy, mutilate these guys. And he really does. And there's dirty references, and it's him being creative with body parts. It's him like strapping on the Wolverine claws and trying to remove them.
Shot where finally he puts on the claws and goes like that, like does the pose, and it has the title card behind him.
Yeah,
I had the dumbest smile on my face throughout this whole fight because you've got Instincts Bye 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 playing in the background. And I'm
and it's not just the fight. It's that he's dancing to Bye Bye Bye. Right. Like, that's the best part. And he like does the clap. If anybody ever saw an NSYNC choreographed Bye Bye Bye, like he does several of the moves at the right moment. It's just hilarious. And it's hilarious. Like, only Ryan Reynolds can do it. And I can't like help, but you know, I had this cheesy pervy laugh when he does the stroke moment. You know,
did you say cheesy pervy laugh?
That's what it was. It was like this cheesy, terrible movie. And I was just chuckling and I was like,
can we hear what that sounds like on the pod? What is your cheesy pervy laugh?
I don't
laugh
think
sound
I can
for?
Recreate it because it was just so innate in this moment.
Like,
well, I mean, the laugh wasn't pervy, but it was to this pervy moment.
Oh, I thought you meant your laugh sounded pervy.
No, I'm not at that level, but I was embarrassed by myself a little, you know, when you're like, I can't believe I just laughed at that. You know what I mean? But I did. I laughed hard at that. I thought it was pretty hilarious. But yeah, the whole scene it's pretty great. And I love that you kind of snap from that of him trying, you know, we're just out there going gangbusters right away. But you go back to, he's actually in his universe, has been rejected by Happy Hogan to be an Avenger. Because of course he has. Also,
I love the tease that
he even tried.
I love the tease of like, oh, are we going to get an RDJ cameo? And they sort of address it. Oh, no, he doesn't take these kind of meetings or whatever. Yeah.
No. And also his picture is his cameo. There's a picture of him in the room, but we're not going to actually, he's not going to take this meeting. Like,
and
LOL.
I noticed that watching this film, and again, we're in spoiler territory. So if you haven't seen this, please stop listening. But I noticed that they seem to, we talked about how this was kind of a send-off to the Fox cinematic universe as opposed to
not
Marvel.
So much a send-off as a flip-off.
Yes,
it was literally like, fuck you very much, Fox and Sony Pictures.
Well,
it was wild.
I read it as a little bit of both. I thought it was a thank you for getting this all started. If not for them, we wouldn't have gotten the X-Men to start with. So this Wolverine character this iteration wouldn't exist. But it is at the same time like, fuck you for not doing better by us. But I think it's very intentional that the only MCU character who shows up is Happy Hogan, as far as the previous MCU before they were acquired. We get a lot of Fox cameos, even we'll get to the Chris Evans piece of it all, but like, we don't get a lot of Marvel characters as we know them. We get a lot of X-Men, Fantastic Four, Blade, all that good stuff.
I think we have to asterisk that statement, which you're gonna upset a lot of Marvel folks if you don't say they are Marvel characters. They were like, they're there are a lot of...
I guess I should have said MCU.
Right. There's this important delineation between what the MCU did and what Marvel did and has done. And that, I think, is where X-Men, as we said, is a remnant of Marvel, not MCU. Predates the MCU. But there are a lot of Marvel characters in this. And there are ones that didn't even appear in the predated Marvel films like X-Men, too much to the chagrin of a lot of fans. And I actually like that, that they kind of address that of like certain people do not appear at a time where it would have made sense. And like, this is their Hail Mary of like somebody, this person should have been included, that kind of thing. It's kind of fun.
Yeah. I hear you on that. So I'll correct myself of I'm not speaking about
No, listen,
about
I'm here to
Marvel
appease the nerds, Lamar. We don't want pitchforks.
Speaking about characters that have appeared in the Marvel Cinematic Universe prior to the Disney acquisition. It kind of felt like two different things going on. You also had Sony doing their Spider-Man thing, and eventually that crossed over too. But I think it's very intentional that they only had Happy Hogan be the main MCU character who shows up in this. You have a little Hulk cameo there, like he gets a little one-shot thing, but aside from that, you don't get a lot. And I think that's intentional because I believe that if they do plan to eventually do a crossover with Deadpool and the X-Men and the Avengers, they're saving that. They don't want to put all of them in this movie because that takes away the potential box office for the next one.
So there is one other thing I will call out, though, on those Marvel cameos or MCU cameos is the Thor scene that everybody is obsessed with. Because like, I don't know if you've followed any of the Instagram and TikTok posts about any of this, but everybody's like, but what did Thor say? Because there's that.
I thought it was
going to
be like a post-credit thing, but it.
No, never, and they don't address it. But it's like, you know, it's this hypothetical timeline maybe of, you know, him holding Deadpool as he's dying. And everybody really wants to know what happens there. So I think you're right. Like, they're saving something, you know.
It's repurposed footage from Thor: The Dark World. So it wasn't as though Chris Hemsworth came in and filmed, like shot this scene.
Right.
But it does give a tease of, like
something,
you said, what could
just
be.
Some other fake timeline, you know, or not fake, but just some other possible timeline. And also everyone hated The Dark World except me, apparently. So I feel like they maybe don't think people know that that's what that's from.
You are a big fan of The Dark World?
I'm not a big fan. I liked it. I didn't think it was as bad as everyone thought it was. You know, everyone hated it, like hated
that's
it.
That's widely considered, bottom three Marvel films. That's interesting.
For sure. People really hate it. They hate the Thor 1 before that, actually, even more.
I've never heard that. Like, I kind of liked the first Thor. I didn't love it.
I liked the first Thor and the second Thor. I just don't like that they didn't like find the right Thor, in my opinion. Like, they didn't commit to a Thor. They changed him. They changed the aesthetic of him, literally.
In the character itself. Okay.
Yeah, the character.
I thought you meant Chris Hemsworth was miscast.
No. I mean, Chris Hemsworth, I think, could have done any of the Thors that they wanted, including the multiple attempts that they made to make him a certain way. I just don't think he found his footing for a couple of films based on the approach they were taking. I don't blame his performance at all. I think
you can trace it all back to when Guardians came out. I think that James Gunn getting on board and him finding a formula that worked. They were like, let's just make everyone funny.
100%. I agree that they copied that. They copied that formula, but it doesn't make sense for Thor. That's my complaint. Yep. Is like, it is not a Thor character. That is not a Thor character. You found a cash grab approach to making these films work financially, but you didn't commit to the right character. That's my thing. But anyways, I didn't think Dark World was that bad. I liked some of the actors. I liked some of the effects, whatever. But I didn't think it was the greatest one either by any means. But I mostly like all of these. It's not until the recent iterations of Marvels that I'm like, they've gone off the rails.
It's become formulaic. A formula can only work for so long before it becomes repetitive and like tired. And 100%. When you have when you have Ant-Man trying to save like universes that we honestly don't give a shit about, like there can
we've had no time to give a shit about.
Yeah. If there's infinite universes and somebody's going to kill off 300 of them, I don't care. Cause infinite's a big number, honestly. Like make me care about the characters that I know within this, what's happening. And then I'll give a shit about the movie.
And that's the flaw in a bunch of these others. Like, that's what happened with Eternals too. Like, you had no time to build investment in these people, unlike the MCU phase one, which made you invested in each individual before they came together. And that is why it worked. And just to tie that into this, the reason that this works is that you do get buy-in to his timeline. So we're still talking like MCU life, and we've seen Deadpool's character and where how he's evolved and all of that. But you get an understanding of his timeline and the sacred timeline and these other timelines and how they're impacted by one another without, I think, getting too in the weeds. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
what,
because he's trying to save the characters that we've known for three movies, 2.5 movies at this point. And that was one of the downsides that I had for this, was I was a little disappointed with how little some of the prior movie characters get used in this. Like, you have, obviously, you know, TJ Miller, who, for, I don't want to say obvious reasons, but depending on your view of him as a person, couldn't be in this one. And then Vanessa feels like she gets super downplayed. Like, Morena Baccarin, who's a great actress, I love her in the first two, and I love their dynamic. So to just have them suddenly be split up because he isn't serving a greater purpose, I didn't love the lack of use of her in this.
Well, I struggled with it because I liked that there was this conflict, like this core conflict, which is important, I think, in general, and that it's not, you know, I don't know, just all a happy ending for them or whatever, because it checks out more, it feels more real. But I agree, she's such an underutilized force in this one. And she is a great actress and she's gorgeous. And like, he's obsessed with her. You know, that's a whole driving force about this, is like, she is his person. And it feels a little unlikely, I will say, that he would just like kind of let that go. You know what I mean? Because he's really kind of resigned. It's funny because he's like working at the equivalent of CarMax, you know, it's DriveMax or whatever. And he's just committed. He's stapling a fucking toupee to his head. He's just like just working every day. Like, he's not Deadpool anymore. He's moved on, whatever. And that, I mean, I know that's supposed to be kind of his struggle and his journey, his superhero journey, but it just, it feels like he wouldn't do that. I do think that's a little bit of a gap,
a bit out of
like,
character. And I guess they try to explain it through his rejection from the Avengers of when they tell him no. And I like that they, again, just good storytelling. They positioned that before the Thanos snap, like it's happening in, I think, 2018 or 2019 before Avengers Infinity War came out. So he's interviewing for the Avengers before that happens. He gets told no. So that explains he's been in this depression for like 6 years at this point. So now I can buy into the breakup, I suppose.
But it's interesting that they would still be around each other, though, as well. Like, because I feel like that would just tempt him and be weird that he was still around her, even though he's, again, fucking obsessed with her and in love with her. And, you know, how would you be able to be around her? But I just do think it's really funny how, you know, him and Peter are working at this place and having this just banal existence of, I'm going to work at, you know, DriveMax and ride my bike to work and all these things. And it doesn't really make sense. But then, you know, he gets basically abducted by the Time Variance Authority and they take him to see Mr. Paradox, aka Matthew McFadden's character, which I just think is such a funny transition to this like TVA being a little bit more menacing than it has been to date, right? Like, it's,
which I was gonna say, shout out to Loki season 1 and 2, which I haven't watched every MCU TV show or even every MCU movie lately, but Loki was pretty fucking good, and I'm glad that they could pull some elements of that from the TVA and whatnot into this film.
Controversial take. I did not love Loki, and that is a big deal because Loki is one of my favorite characters, period, both in the MCU and in the comics and in Norse mythology, like the actual origin story. I'm obsessed with Loki. And I don't think they did it right. I have strong feelings about the Loki TV show. I don't think they did it right. I also think it was too big of a gap between Tom Hiddleston playing it in the films to when they made the show that he had so disconnected from the character that I don't think he fell right back into it. I think he played it differently. I think he...
Well, I think it's... Not to get into a huge Loki conversation, but I thought that was okay because he had been playing one version of Loki, and in the TV show, we're resetting back to the original Loki we knew from 2012 in Avengers. So I thought that made it more acceptable. But I don't know, guys out there. So you have one vote for and you have one against. You're the tiebreaker. Go watch Loki.
Well, and it's not even that I think it's interesting. I think they could have done it better. And I have like a whole hypothesis. And again, maybe we'll watch that and have a little separate watch party. But I have a whole hypothesis of
TV shows too.
We can drink and watch anything, right? Mm. So yeah, I think there's a whole way they could have gone with that would have made it actually a lot more interesting, in my opinion. But anyways, all that's
saying. We can drink and watch birds one day and go bird watching and record.
Listen, do you know that that's trending for people our age? And I'm fucking ready. Let's go find some birds. Yes, it is. It's like a new thing. And I have beautiful doves outside of my office. I'm here for it. Let's figure out what kind of birds are hanging out. I love it. But yeah, all that to say, we digress. I think it's cool that we have this character that offers and entices Deadpool this chance to be sort of a part of the thing that he has kind of wanted to be a part of. Obviously, he's like, I want to be an Avenger and I want to be in the MCU. And you have to acknowledge like all the meta references throughout that make this kind of make sense that he would want
the
to
entire
be
plot is meta. It's him trying to get into the MCU, but Disney saying, well, you're an R-rated character and like, we can't have R-rated characters.
Yeah.
But also we kind of have been missing Wolverine because that's a big cash grab for us. Like it's all super meta.
But I like that they add the complication of these different timelines and that he needs to find the right Wolverine. And that whole montage is really fun of him going through all the different possible Wolverines and rejecting them for various reasons. And this is, I think, where we could touch on a couple of the cameos, but one of them that really stood out to me that was so funny is the Henry Cavill cameo.
Cavalrine,
exactly. So he's not Wolverine, he's the Cavalrine, you know? And so I just love all those different appearances and the different iterations of Wolverine basically telling Deadpool to fuck off, which is hilarious.
Like, I liked the Cavalrine. I liked Deadpool saying, hey, if you ever want to come over to this side of the fence, basically, you know, get away from the DCU.
Get out of DC, who just fired him, you know, whatever. But I like that he eventually pulls this one Wolverine. And I think it's cool that they put him in the traditional Wolverine costume, which has become the subject of much reference throughout all of these of like, he never wears the traditional uniform and costume.
I also marked out so fucking hard when he finally pulled the headpiece over.
Oh my God. Who didn't? We were like, yes, we weren't going to see it. Like, you didn't know if you were going to see it. Cause you know, his hair has always kind of captured that for this particular Wolverine. So you were like, well, maybe they're just not going to do it. And then they pull it on and you're like, yes. Yeah. I geeked out hard. Speaking of geek out moments, I think we should talk cameos. You know,
yeah, I think that makes logical sense.
What are all the crazy cameos, of which there are many? So I have a whole fucking list. I don't know how you want to do it, but.
Well, the first one that it's not even a cameo, but I wanted to point out because you mentioned Cassandra Nova as being the villain. I'm not a huge comic person, so I had no idea who Cassandra Nova was. But I liked the way, as even as a non-comic reader, they incorporated her character and they had her come out. You thought it was going to be a version of Charles Xavier. No, I'm his sister. I was sent here. He's not. And we get her whole backstory. And as somebody who wasn't familiar with the character at all, I was like, 5 minutes in. Okay, I get it. She's pissed off. I get why she wants to be here and why she's controlling this environment.
And I like that they sort of win her back to work with them a little bit after the fact temporarily to be like, hey, he didn't fucking know about you. If he had, he would have come for you. Like, and that checks out with everyone. You know what I mean? Everyone can buy into that of like, of course, Charles Xavier would come find you. Right. So I like that they do touch on her humanity and make her less of a sociopath for like, even if it's for 3 seconds. Right.
Yeah.
And I think that's interesting, but she of course reverts, that muscle memory kicks in and she comes right back and is an asshole. So she stays being the villain, but I like the variations of the villains. You know, I like that they have a little bit more dimension and gray to them because again, Mr. Paradox is similar. He's like not totally bad. He kind of just wants to speed up this process that he feels is already coming. And he's
cutting corners at work. Who doesn't do that? Right.
Exactly. He's cutting corners at work. He's like, guys, we are
time for all this paperwork.
We are not efficient enough. Let's speed it up. You know, listen, I'm impatient too. I super identify with Mr. Paradox in this case, but yeah, I thought that was a good kind of addendum to their story, but one of my favorite cameos is, well, two, I think. I have two ties for first for me. And because, of course, I can't pick one. So
two people in first place.
Two people in first place. Welcome to Mackenzie's brain. All right. Chris Evans, of course, as Johnny Storm. Yes,
so well executed.
So well executed. Which, number one, we knew it wouldn't be Captain America.
I didn't know that. Okay. That's again when I said earlier, I think it was so intentional to not have MCU people in this.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, it's Cap, blah, blah, blah. And I had forgotten that he played Johnny Storm. And when he says fucking flame on.
Yeah. The theater went nuts. Geeked out hard. Yeah. Yeah. Geeked out. Also, speaking of sidebar, my theater sucked. They didn't get all of this shit. And I was so annoyed. But anyway, yeah, he has his moment of. He sounds kind of Cap-esque, but it's just because that's Chris Evans' voice. But I like that it's kind of misleading you to think that it might be Cap. You know, it's kind of a fun possibility. And then, of course, it's not. It's Johnny Storm. He flames out. But I love that he, like, literally flames out, does not do a great job of this, gets immediately kind of embarrassed.
Well, so in regards to that, I felt so bad because I didn't recognize Pyro from X2 and X-Men The Last Stand. Like, when Johnny flies up, shoots the flames, and he just absorbs them, I saw the actor, and I was like, oh, I guess he's just has the ability to cancel mutant
Pyro
powers.
Man.
And then as we got further, and I was like, oh, it's fucking Pyro. You know, it's in my defense, it's been 20 years. And
you know all those similar, dangerous mutants you hear about on the news?
I'm the worst one.
I'm the worst one. I had such a crush on him back then when that came out. And that was like his line. I would like literally replay that. I was like, oh, hot. Too bad he was like kind of a douchebag. But goes to show what my taste was back then. But I liked his appearance for that reason. And I like that this is like the Misfits. You know, these are the Misfits. They didn't land in the OG content for whatever reason, and they didn't stay on for whatever reason. And my other favorite one is one that never appeared, which we were all super upset about, which was Gambit. Channing Tatum as Gambit. Like, back when all the X-Men's happened, I don't know if you remember the uproar. I was one of the people uproaring that there was no Gambit.
Not in this. Yeah.
Why is there no Gambit?
Like, he's coming. He's going to be in the next one. He's going to be in the next one. And bullshit. Never fucking happened. And I remember, I don't know if you remember all the rumors, and this is early internet days, so maybe they weren't, but it was like, the rumors were that when they started doing these origin stories with Wolverine Origins, there was going to be a Magneto movie. And there was going to be a Gambit movie. Those were the three that were rumored.
It was MCU-level rumors that never came to fruition, yeah.
And then that Wolverine Origins movie happened and fucking bombed because it was not great. I'm sorry that I've been playing it up so well, but it's not. It wasn't a good movie at the time, for sure. It's now a guilty pleasure. But the Gambit movie never got made, and Channing Tatum never got the chance. So it was very cool to give him that time in this to be like, hey, let's see what you would have done with this character.
And I think, I think he did a good job. There was some debate, I think, maybe for most people. I feel like if you, again, read the comics or you watched the animated series, you were like, this lands. He does a good job of it. His voice lands, his accent. I know his accent is bad. They make a fucking reference of it, but that's the point. It's not actually bad.
I was gonna say, which do you think came first? Do you think that Channing got on set and during rehearsals they were like, "Oh, you're going real hard on the Cajun here," and they wrote those jokes in, or do you think they wrote it knowing you can go all in?
I think they wrote the jokes in response to his accent. But I think his accent is on the money, by the way, of like the character. So I just think it's like, again, fucking lean in. This is funny. This is somebody we've been waiting to see on screen for a while. It's such a fucking fun ride to see him finally. And I was here for it. I loved it.
And I liked the call, a little in joke where we'll get to the other cameos in a second, but the other ones that have been in previous Fox movies have said, oh, I got sent here. And Channing Tatum's Gambit says, I don't know, I think I was born here, because his movie never got fucking made.
Literally was born here. Exactly. I love all those little references. And there are other ones that, again, didn't land. So like Pyro got sent there. Sabretooth got sent there. He was like, and I don't know if you remember Sabretooth in the OG, but he was fucking irritating. Like,
Taylor Mayne, right? Played Sabretooth.
Taylor Mayne. Tyler Mayne, sorry. Didn't like him. Didn't like their execution of the character.
That was the other one. I was thinking of Taylor Kitsch from Friday Night Lights, who played Gambit in Wolverine Origins. And when the card came out in this, Janelle can vouch for this. I was like bouncing in my seat and tapping my legs like a 6-year-old. I was like, yeah, it's him. And I was still very excited for Channing, but I vouch for Taylor Kitsch. I think he's a great actor, and I was a little bummed it wasn't him, but I still was excited for Channing.
I think Channing Tatum did a really good job, but I agree with you. I feel like both could do really well. But I also think we had a couple other appearances that were good that people forget are associated with Marvel. You know, mm-hmm. like Blade, Wesley Snipes comes in as Blade. Elektra, Jennifer Garner comes in to play Elektra, who I think was, if her movie had been made now, I think it would have landed a lot better because she was a bad bitch and she did a really good job. Jennifer Garner did Alias for years where she played a CIA spy. Perfect person for this job. And it's a fun flick and she does a good job at this character. So I like that they brought her back for this and they brought all of them back. And it's a nice reminder that some of these characters are Marvel characters that I think a lot of people forget are.
And they sort of address that in a joke where they say we finally get our ending because these were characters that could have had one more movie maybe to give them a finale. They never got and their Logan.
Right.
So now they're getting this ability to let's have one climactic fight scene to send off these characters into the ether.
Because again, like the whole story of the Fox Marvel attempts is that it's a bunch of unfinished stories. They just didn't finish any of this out. And so I like that you put a bow on a bunch of these people in a great way. I also really love the cameos that are kind of cameos, but kind of not by his family. You've got to get the Ryan Reynolds family cameos that are awesome. Blake Lively is Lady Deadpool. Mm-hmm. They're freaking big ass long blonde hair. You can tell. Inez, his kiddo, is Kidpool. The like, you know, basically just cursing
the worst
one on the whole cast. She's Kidpool. And then Olin is Baby Pool. That is a one-year-old baby, y'all, is Baby Pool.
Yeah.
And then their daughter, James, is the oldest, I think, was the Screaming Mutant.
Okay.
And finally, my favorite one, she actually doesn't appear on screen, but their daughter, Betty, was credited as the Hugh Jackman Wrangler. And this is because she is apparently just loves Hugh Jackman, obsessed with him, but she shows this love and affection by beating the shit out of him, just like attacking him on the regular. And I just love that.
He regenerates.
He regenerates. He's Wolverine. Yeah. She's like testing the boundaries of that. Like how she thinks he can heal. She's 4 years old. She thinks he can heal. She thinks he's fine. It's a great time. I love that for all of us. That appearance by the whole family is so fun.
I called this sort of a reverse cameo, but I liked how they called out there was a Juggernaut who we had never seen, but it wasn't Vinny Jones. And they were like, oh, you're this universe's Juggernaut. Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. So just some guy. And I'm not to disparage the actor, but we've never seen this person before. So I liked that they added that in. If there's going to be people you don't recognize.
I also like that Peter's character, Rob Delaney, universally loved all of a sudden. And like, he's just been he's fine. He's charming. You know, whatever.
Every Deadpool has a Peter.
But every Deadpool has a Peter and they just love him. And so he's like universally beloved and his fucking outfit is terrible and just like showing off his junk and his roles and all the things. And you're like, and everybody's just like, Peter, you know, they just love him.
That character is just something. It takes a lot of like balls for Ryan and the rest of the writers on this to have this sort of normie who was so beloved because he was only in the first one for like 3 minutes. He just had this little piece and everyone's like, oh, that's hilarious. To give him this bigger part and still have it not fail. They have the part at the beginning where they set up where he's got like, he's talking about a friend who got his nipples pierced and then also got an extension on. I'm not going to go into the details, but that plays off later in the movie. And it's just like to have that character do that and to still have it seem funny and like weirdly, like not wholesome, that's not the right word, but not really fucking weird. It's just like, oh my God, Peter, you're the best.
Impressive. He's cute and it is kind of wholesome. He relatively to the rest of the whole show and all the other characters, he is quite wholesome for sure. Yeah. But all that to say, like, we get these great cameos. We get this very interesting story that involves the TVA and all these timelines, and they're trying to save the day, right? And then Cassandra lets them free, sort of-ish. They kind of escape, slash or let go, whatever. But then she pops through. We get this whole Deadpool battle. And my favorite part about the Deadpool battle is the dog, is that Wolverine just pops up with Dogpool and is like, well, nobody's going to shoot me because I have a dog. And I was like, 100%. Every person here is just going to stop and be like, oh, Dogpool.
It's either the dog or Peter. Those are the only two things that Deadpools are like all in agreement
they're gonna hit pause for. Exactly. And I just love that he just walks through. And I love that the dog, if you didn't know, if you don't follow We Rate Dogs, again, sponsor us. They did a Deadpool dog pool competition of like who would be the Wolverine
dog. Is
this
how they picked the dog?
No. So the dog from Dogpool was already selected, but they wanted to find a Wolverine dog. So the competition was who's the Wolverine dog to the Dogpool dog. So if you want to see who that was on We Rate Dogs. It was super cute and really funny. And I was like, we needed a Wolverine dog in the movie too. It would have been adorable.
That in our socials this week is like a picture of that dog as well.
We can.
I will say at the beginning, I said there were a couple things that didn't work as well for me in this. So I do want to touch on just that really quick. I thought Dogpool, as fun as it was to see the world's ugliest dog in this film, I didn't need like three or four different slow motion dog running scenes. It's like, we get it. The dog's ugly, but he thinks it's cute and it's a dog. So we all love it still. But that kind of wore out its tread really quick for me. And then the other one is Nicepool. I thought that he was good in his scenes. And I really like when he's like, I can break the fourth wall too. And he just says some random movie title.
The proposal. He literally...
But I didn't love the whole carry, like using him as a bullet shield. First off, MacGruber did it better. We mentioned that during our I Know What You Did Last Summer. So shout out to Ryan Phillippe. But like, it just went on too long. There's a couple jokes that don't necessarily land and usually you move on quickly. But the jokes that take 30 seconds to get across for like those two, they can be a little trying just in those moments, you know?
Maybe on another watch, I would feel that. I didn't really notice it then. I mostly thought it was funny. And also if there's a dog on screen, like my wiring is short circuiting and I'm the happiest I've ever been. So if there's 12 hours of dog, I'm just going to be happy. So that didn't bother me at all. But yeah. I hear you like in the plot that could probably get old maybe for people not like me.
Those were the only the things that stood out to me as not being great. But you mentioned the all Deadpool fight scene. Was that all CGI or do you think some of that was practical?
I think some of it was practical, but I do think there was a lot of CGI. And I will say that is maybe my one major complaint about this film is that not just that scene, but there were multiple scenes where I felt like the CGI was really heavy. I thought it was like, wow, not only is it, I don't know, almost unnecessary, but it's like if CGI is as good and it is as advanced as we have purported it to be, why can I tell so many moments are CGI? And like, there are so many of these Marvel movies where I feel like I'm seeing that more and more of, I can see the CGI moments and they take me out of it.
Because we talked about this last week, AKA earlier today, about Fall Guy and how I couldn't pick up on which stunts were practical and which were very few of them and that were CGI. But it's like the real ones aren't as impressive. And in this, it's the opposite where that Deadpool scene, it's a one shot pan and it's just them wrecking fucking shop going left to right throughout this entire group of Deadpools, this army of Deadpools. And it is fucking awesome. But at the same time, I just went, man, if they could have choreographed that with real people and made that work, it would be so much more impressive. Not to say it's not, it looks awesome. But because I know it's CGI, it takes away just a little bit.
And I don't think it's all of it, like I said, but I haven't reconned which parts of it are real and which aren't. Like, there are parts that feel more real and there are others that super do not.
I wonder if they could have, Hugh and Ryan were practical and they CGI'd all the action around them. Like, that could be it. I'm not really sure, but
I don't know. But I do think like there's some good cameos in that they don't really explain. You know, Matthew McConaughey is the cowboy pool.
Yeah.
and there's a bunch of those that I think do make it fun. But I do think that scene, if I were to pick a scene to trim, even though that is a fun scene, I do think that scene is quite long. And it feels disproportionate to like how much time you have to deal with the fucking problem at hand. You're like, there's no way that this battle could happen for as long as it does and me still get to, you know, to this in time.
Yeah.
That part does feel like a little disconnect.
Where they jump out the back of the bus window looks really pretty rough for like 2024 CGI. That's the part that looks the weirdest.
And again, like, you know, again, Fall Guy really has shown us how you can do stunts really legitimately and have them look really well done. And I'm like, We couldn't have a guy jump through some bus class?
Fucking bungee cords on him and yank him through the bus window.
I bet he'd be ready to go. Like, let's be honest. So, yeah, it does make me long for the days of some real stunts. Yeah.
But spinning off of that, I wanted to not really backtrack, but I do want to say one of my favorite things about this, we talked about Fall Guy last week with the different, how it felt like the last 40 minutes was just different set pieces of this action scene and this one. This movie... just not only the Deadpool fight, the original Wolverine Deadpool fight in like the desert or whatever, the next one when they're in the Honda Odyssey and they fight it out there. There's the battle with all the cameos within the giant dead corpse of Ant-Man. All four of those sequences are just, they're spread out perfectly. They're executed perfectly. And it's these movies, it's got to be a tight script, but if you don't nail the action sequences, it falls apart. And this just fucking kills it in the action sequence department.
Yeah, the action sequences are so fun. And I love, like we said, you know, the cameo folks, the Electras, the Blades, the Gambits are so fun to watch in those moments. And I love, again, I geeked out on the Gambit because it's like, this is the first person we haven't really gotten to see, you know, have these action sequences before. And it's really fun, and it's a very different kind of superhero and action sequence. And so, yeah, I agree. Like, they pace them well, they plan them well, they're funny at the same time. I love that the Deadpool and Wolverine fight in the Honda Odyssey is so funny. Like that they're the fact that they're even in a fucking minivan for half of that is so funny. And so I do think it's really enjoyable. And then we get to the end. They have this big climactic battle. Of course, they defeat Cassandra and they, you know, and Mr. Paradox gets arrested by, what is her? She's B-15, I think it is. And
yeah, she was in Loki, but I don't remember the
I think it's B-15 something, whatever, of the TVA. And they have now salvaged their respective timelines, right? And so everything's fine. And you have this moment of them on the sidewalk with the shawarma reference of like, do you want to get some shawarma? Like, yeah, I'm hungry. And I'm like,
the Avengers invented shawarma.
The Avengers invented shawarma, obviously. And so it just all these fun references that take you back to a bunch of things in that moment. And then they're about to go their separate ways and say sayonara. And it feels feasible that they might legitimately go their separate ways, but it's just such this like sweet relief a little bit that they're like, wait a minute, just kidding. And it feels very rom-commy as well of like, wait,
he got off the plane. Yeah,
right, he got off the plane. Yeah, come
I
with
thought
me.
The fake outs were super well done because I was bought into originally, I think they're saying goodbye to each other and it's like, it takes one of us to do this, one of us is going to get destroyed, and I think Wolverine's gonna go in, and it makes it seem like, yeah, that's logical, we're trying to that get rid of sense. Logan again in a healthy way.
But also, he needs that redemption arc as well. Yeah, like, he wants
that version of Wolverine for sure. So I was bought into that. Then it's, oh no, that's a fake out. Now Deadpool shoves him outside and is going in. Yeah. It's like, fuck, Deadpool's going to sacrifice himself for his universe, just like Vanessa kind of, not asked him to, but giving yourself up.
Put yourself above others, yeah.
Giving this Wolverine a second chance. Nope, that's not what's happening. Wolverine breaks in. And I think I figured out, okay, they're going to survive now because it's both of them. But yeah, when they go to break up eventually, and it's like, yep, they're just going to go their separate ways, say goodbye to Logan, this is the last time you'll see him. No, we're going to leave the door open again for potential. And there's that running joke of, till you're 90.
You're going to do this till you're 90. I fucking love it so much. No, and I love that scene too, because they both have reasons to do the sacrificing, you know, like they both have legitimate reasons for that. And it does for both of them actually show growth. That's the great part about this is like, even though they're radically different characters in this iteration, they've found the two that are most like each other, most need each other and have a similar issue, challenge, thing to overcome, whatever you want to call it. And so I love that it makes sense for either one of them to do it, but it also is the most cohesive and the most poetic almost that they both have to do it, you know, and they both have to be a part of it. The whole fucking thing is called Deadpool and Wolverine. It makes sense. It can't be one of them. It makes sense when it kind of comes together that it's both of them and that they kind of, they ride off into the sunset together in this very different setup. But I love that at the end you get the little nugget of him encouraging him to talk to Vanessa again. And I like that his whole little world of nine people, as he says, has been saved, and now Wolverine's a part of it, and it's very cute and wholesome. But yes, it does open the door for more.
And we hadn't even mentioned the involvement of X-23, who I think was given away in some of the trailers, which is a bummer because it feels like that was meant to be a surprise. But and I if I'm remembering correctly, this Wolverine and this X-23 shouldn't have any experience together, because I think in this Wolverine's universe, the X-Men were dead before he ever became the Logan that we know from the movie Logan. But I like the connection that they have. I like the relationship and how they build on that to, again, not desecrate that film, aside from the corpse itself. But, you know, they work in this character of X-23, so we get this happy ending of them also continuing their relationship in some way.
Yeah, and in the movie, she's Laura. So just for context, like, for people who maybe don't know who we're talking about. So she's obviously who Logan is fighting for in Logan to live on and kind of, you know, save her. And yeah, and they get to be together and not so much have to have that same sacrifice. So yeah, I think on the whole, it's a great time. It opens the door for more possible stories to be told. And we also got some satisfying scenes that we hadn't gotten before. So I think it was really enjoyable in that way.
Same. I had a blast. I'm definitely going to go see it again in theaters. And I think what this did well is when you do multiverse, it's very easy to just have the film kind of become a bunch of cameos and a bunch of callbacks and reference, which there are a fair amount of.
Oh, there are so many, but it works.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like it hinges on just like, oh, look at this. Oh, look at this. Oh, look, it's this person. The way that they take those four main cameo characters that we mentioned, and they're not just one-offs. They don't do a scene and then disappear.
No.
They are integral to the plot of this. And I just think that's
so intentional.
Cool. And they don't overdo it. You get about, like, we talked about, what, six cameos? So that's all you get. And the rest of it is sort of like these in-jokes and things, and we'll see where it goes from here. But it doesn't feel lazy, I guess, is what I'm saying.
No, it feels very intentional. It feels like there are a lot of Easter eggs, but that were written in very well. I think, again, we have to call out the writing here. The writing is so good, and it is it's interesting that you mentioned at the top that people feel like this plot wasn't cohesive. I think the writing is really quite cohesive. It's very intentional. Every cameo has a purpose and a callback. And if we go back to, again, spoilers, the post-credit scene is Deadpool proving that Johnny Storm said all that shit, actually. And it's like, I didn't say any of that. And you kind of can buy it in the moment that
believe that Deadpool would just lie.
Because you believe Deadpool's a fucking liar. But then he's like, JK, let me fucking prove it to you. He said all of that. And it's, again, like, it just put a bow on it.
It's,
I feel like
the
they did a really good job.
We're not the father moment.
Right.
Mic drop. I'm out of here. Yeah.
100%. So I hope that they do more, because it was a great time and I'm ready for it. Honestly.
I'm on both sides of it, where it's like, if this is the last time we see this version of Wolverine and this Deadpool, this was a great send off, but fingers crossed that we get something more.
To be fair, I wouldn't think that they would saturate it just for the sake of saturating it.
Right.
You know what I mean? I feel like it wouldn't come back unless they felt like they had good material with which to do it. So I agree. I feel like I could go either way, but it was a good send off if it was the last one. I just doubt it. Probably is. So anyway, thanks for hanging with us as we went ham on this really fun outing of Deadpool and Wolverine. We're going to shake it up a little bit next week. I will say we're going to come. It's still a summer blockbuster from this year, but it's a very different vibe. We're going to come back next week to talk about Inside Out 2.
Is Wolverine in this one?
Maybe. You have to come back and find out.
Joy, sadness, and Wolverine.
Right. Anxiety also makes an appearance because adulthood. Right. Sucks. But I do like that this is actually when we talk blockbusters, this one also did very well. So people, it may sound like it's out of left field, but people love this movie. No, I'm excited to talk about it.
Highest grossing animated something or another.
It's the highest, I think, opening
that
of
might
a
be it.
Right. But I mean, who knows? But again, by the time we talk about it, it may have really knocked some stuff out of the park. It's very well done and people love it. And I thought at first that maybe not that many people would see it. As we've said, sequels like don't always get the same showing.
Right.
And people really wanted to see it. So we're going to talk about it.
Yeah. And while you're waiting for that episode, please go follow us on our socials. We Drink and We Watch Things on both Instagram and now TikTok, where we're going to be more active. Ooh. You can always email us at We Drink and We Watch Things Pod at Gmail if you are old school. But yeah, give us a like, a share, a follow, all that good stuff. And give us a review wherever you listen to podcasts, please.
But only good ones. I'm going to say that forever.
Four and above, either.
Four and above, or just keep it to yourself. If you don't have improvement. Yeah. If you don't have nice things to say, you know what I mean? Don't say them. Anyway, all that to say, thanks for joining us this week. But for now, go have a drink and watch a thing. Cheers.
Cheers.
Okay, we're going to do this. We're going to not mix up the Ryans today.
No.
Well, we probably will, but we're going to try not to.
Let's do some warm-up vocal exercises. Ryan Reynolds, Ryan Gosling. Ryan Reynolds, Ryan Gosling.
Gosling. The Gosling helps, I feel like. If we just say a Gosling every time, we won't fuck it up.
Huge jacked man. That's how you remember which one he is, because he's the big guy.